This week, Qantas became just the second airline in the world to set a goal of reaching net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Part of its plan involves investing $50 million over 10 years to help develop a sustainable aviation fuel industry.
We've tested, as example, a mustard seed, a sustainable fuel from LA to Melbourne. They produce 80% less carbon than traditional jet fuel. So we know the technology is possible. It's to actually do it commercially and to do it on scale and not impacting other environmental concerns like taking away from food crops or increasing the cost of food crops. And that's why it'll take some time, I think, to get there.
That's Qantas Chief Alan Joyce speaking on Breakfast earlier this week. The International Civil Aviation Organization says renewable jet fuel is crucial to the aviation industry's goal of halving emissions by 2050. Patrick Gruber is Chief Executive of the US-based biofuels maker Gevo. Welcome to Breakfast.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
How long do you think it is until sustainable jet fuel is widely commercially available?
The industry has to build out some capacity to make it at large scale. So I think it's going to take a couple years yet to get it up in the tens of millions of gallons.
What are we talking about in terms of making it commercially viable? Because from what I read, the planes wouldn't be running entirely on biofuel. It would be a combination.
Well, in terms of the technologies are proven, we actually are supplying fuels already to many, many companies around the world, and there's other suppliers who are as well. So it isn't a question of viability, it works. And what is the question is, what will airlines pay for it in the long run? Because it's generally more expensive to manufacture than, say, petroleum, especially when petroleum's at $50 a barrel. And so the reason people focus on California is California has extremely good low-carbon fuel standard, and it rewards for carbon reductions. And that's why people are focused on that particular market, flying planes in and out of there.
And what is the cost difference currently?
It depends. But generally, it's within 2x of petroleum-based. And as the industry scales up, that'll come closer. When you take into account the carbon value that you can get paid in California, then it brings it closer, probably within 25% of the petrochemical-based fuel products.
But it can only be achieved through subsidization currently.
It's not subsidization is kind of a wrong term. People talk about it that way, but it's kind of like, the petroleum industry, there's different perspectives around the world, but the petroleum industry has gotten away with, the pollution and all the rest that goes with it. There's societal cost. People want carbon reduction. And so in California and in other states in the U.S. and also in Europe, they've set a pretty clear policy that says that companies need to be accountable for their carbon footprint, and it's in that regard. So it's not a subsidy isn't quite right. It's trying to offset the carbon.
Step away slightly from the jargon around this, because I'm aware that our audience may not be as into the detail of this as you are. Are you saying that if we're properly costing the impact of petroleum, that it might start to get closer to the cost of biofuel?
That's correct. Well, in fact, there was an IMF study that came out in May of 2019 that talked about all the subsidies of the various types, direct and indirect, that go to the petrochemical industry. It's enormous. And so you can take, when it's a $5 trillion number like they put forward, you can take that with a bit of grain of salt. But it's still significant. And so when you consider that petroleum-based fuels definitely pollute, definitely cause, particulates, that's a big deal in a lot of parts of the world. Those are like something that causes cancer. And then you consider the global warming concerns, and you have all these issues like wildfires and all the rest, and the climate issues all around the world. And did fossil-based fuels play a role in that? Well, it's an unequivocal fact that every time we burn a fossil-based carbon, that's due to our activity as people, that puts carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that absolutely would not have been there but for our activity. So who's accountable for that? How will it happen? In some places, the policies have stepped up and said that we want to reduce carbon, so they've created programs where people who have reductions in carbon can get paid for that. And that's what happens.
So what goes into the biofuel that you're using?
We're using carbohydrates. So our product can be made from carbohydrates. We use a non-food corn. And what's interesting about our process is we separate out the carbohydrates, that's the starch, from the protein part. So we capture 5 kilos of protein and sell that into the food chain and for every gallon of jet fuel. The way that we make this jet fuel is we take the carbohydrates, we do a fermentation to make a chemical intermediate that it's called isobutanol. It's got 4 carbons. It's actually like one of the flavors of a Scotch whiskey compared to a bourbon. But we take that chemical and then we do chemistry to it, and this, we make jet fuel. What's interesting about this is it is actually jet fuel, and you can use it up to a 50% blend. Because of the cost, people would generally blend it at a much lower level. But it gets a start for companies like us who are looking for off-takers.
So when planes are flying at the moment using biofuel, it's a combination of biofuel and standard jet fuel?
Yeah, generally these fuels are approved to be blended up to 50%.
And obviously there are criticisms of biofuel, particularly the land that is used to generate the bioenergy. They say it's an unwise use of land needed for food production and carbon storage. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that these broad statements, like in all things, generally aren't true. So, for example, let's use...
Let's get specific then, because the World Resources Institute, that's a US-based nonprofit, they calculate that providing just 10% of the world's liquid transportation fuel in the year 2050 would actually require nearly 30% of all the energy in a year's worth of crops the world produces today. That's not a great set of figures.
Well, what happens is that it's all, you know, in this, when company groups make assumptions like that, they're doing broad-based assumptions. But the way to think of it, there's a couple thoughts that come to mind. One of them is that, you know, we talk about renewable electricity versus, you know, dirty coal-fired electricity. You can't make a broad statement against all electricity. Likewise, how a raw material is produced. So, for example, we don't use necessarily crops. We've made jet fuel from wood. And we're the first to fly it with Alaska Airlines, first in the world to do that. We could use wood. There's an abundance of wood resources if they're managed properly and managed sustainably. Likewise, crops need to be managed sustainably. So, for example, even in with something like an example of field corn, which is not an edible corn, you have to process it first to make it into something that can be used for food. You know, the yields in the United States are, you know, let's see, 5 or 6 times more than the world average. So maybe we should have people learn how to teach people how to grow things more effectively. Mm-hmm. And those assumptions aren't taken into account in those kind of studies, and that's frustrating.
Patrick, so, we will have to leave it there because we've got to get to the news at 7 o'clock. We appreciate your time, and we hope we can talk to you again.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Patrick Gruber is the chief executive of the US-based biofuels maker, Gevo.